Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, just over a week ago, 528 Rohingya refugees have forced their way through the doors and barriers of the Sungai Bakap immigration detention depot, where close to 700 people were being held. Now, six of the refugees who broke out had died, including two children, after they were struck by fast-moving vehicles while attempting to cross an expressway to make their escape. Now, was overcrowding at the detention centre, as alleged by Suhakam, the reason for the breakout? Let's ask our first guest tonight. Heidi Kwa is the Director of Refuge for the Refugees. It is an NGO that aims to provide education and opportunities for refugee children. Heidi, you work very closely with refugees. I'm just wondering what you think drove hundreds of them to force their way out of a detention centre to try and make an escape.
Melissa and Shara, thank you so much for having me on the show. You know, just based on news reports and based on my personal experience working with refugees who have been detained, I mean, based on news reports, you know, news reports are basically saying that what sparked everything was a death in detention center when a detainee was denied access to medical attention. You know, that was, I think, what broke the camel's back. You know, something that, I mean, it's been a build up for a while, right? The mistreatment, the abuse, the lack to basic human rights, basic necessities. And I think, you know, just being in an extremely overcrowded place, it came to a point where they couldn't stand it, and so they broke out. You know, when they escaped, they didn't just escape. You know, it was actually a riot with several demands that was being held. You know, some of the demands included just fair treatment of those in detention centers. And when we talk about fair treatment, we're not talking about, you know, five-star treatment where they get served like abalone or something every day, right? It was just simply being treated like human beings. Do not get beaten up, do not get mistreated.
Right, Heidi, on that score, it's very interesting because the enforcement authorities, you know, put out an alert suggesting that these individuals who had escaped were hungry and dangerous. This position was, interestingly enough, countered by the Mantri Basaf Kadar, who said he didn't think that this was the case. He said they were just people trying to live. I wonder about this attitude by enforcement. Is this attempt to dehumanize something you see happening regularly?
Yes, definitely. I think the fear-mongering definitely does not help. And putting out alerts telling people to, like, hey, if you spot this Rohingya refugee detainees in your kampungs, please alert authorities because they are dangerous. I mean, first of all, they're being detained not because they're criminals. They're being detained because they don't have the right documentation. They're not dangerous in any way at all. And constantly telling the public that they're dangerous just creates fear and more xenophobia.
How do you have any sense of how long they have been detained for? So say a refugee does not have papers, as you said, undocumented, and they are, you know, caught and they're put into this detention center. How long might they likely be in there? What exactly are they waiting for?
Yeah, so basically people are put in detention centers to be deported back to their home countries, right? But refugees cannot be deported back to their home countries. Based on the number of cases that we've processed, a lot of times they're in it for about 2 years, more than 2 years, 2 or 3 years. It's an extremely long period of time without knowing when they'll be released. And I think that's a frustrating thing, you know, being held in detention centers without knowing when your release dates is extremely agonizing, not just for those in detention centers, but also for the family members. A lot of times I've got my students reaching out to me. I mean, remember 2020 where the mass arrest happened and took place, right? You know, quite a number of the families we worked in were taken away. until today, we're in 2022, and these children still have not had contact with their parents. They don't know if their parents are in Malaysia. Are they deported back home? Are they alive? Are they well? And so this can be extremely distressing. Let us also remember that detention centers and prisons are built differently. Detention centers and prisons are built differently. Detention centers are temporary holding spaces that do not have the right facilities for a long-term stay as compared to prisons. So being held in a space that's not meant for a long-term stay, but being held there for a long period of time, for years and years upon end, can be actually detrimental.
Yeah, it can be detrimental to mental health. I mean, one thing is that these depots as places of despair, extreme despair. I want to ask you about this incident seems to have at least gotten the authorities coughing up some information. So we know that about 17,000 people are held in detention centers. That's for various reasons, might not all be asylum seekers. But we know that about 1,500 children. But what can you tell us about the experience of detention, long-term detention on children?
It takes an extremely terrible toll on their mental health. First of all, children should never be in detention centers. If I'm not wrong, it's actually against the law to have children in detention centers. That's why human rights defenders and non-profit organizations have been pushing for alternatives to detention for children, because no children should spend an extended period of time in detention centers. We're not even talking about children at this point of time. Just last year, just early this year, I processed the case. One of my students' brother was in detention center. I think he was only in for a short period of time, somewhere from November last year till March this year. And yet it was about half a year, and yet his experience was extremely distressing. He came out and he couldn't go back to work because he was so traumatized by his experience. He couldn't sleep throughout the night. He can't even have a whole proper meal without throwing up. And that's why he has to eat 5 meals a day, really tiny bite-sized portions, because his body was still adjusting to being out in a normal world again.
Right. Heidi, we just want to thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight, because you have been put through a lengthy legal battle over a Facebook posting back in 2020, precisely oversharing some of your observations about the conditions of the lived realities of refugees in immigration detention centres. So congratulations on the discharge not amounting to acquittal. We appreciate you speaking out again about the conditions. Are you fearful of speaking out still? Are you worried that perhaps there might be repercussions for those who speak out, for those who help, for those refugees who have escaped but been recaptured? Repercussions of the actions?
Yeah, I mean, if I get to be completely honest, I mean, I wish I could come on Ashawani and say, like, I am completely brave. But the truth is, there is that tinge of fear, but I am a firm believer that fear should not stop us from speaking out, especially speaking up about abuse and about mistreatment, speaking up about the truth, essentially. And so, I mean, it's something that I wake up and tell myself every day. I mean, it's kind of odd, right? Just after fighting a lengthy legal battle, I mean, being charged, under a criminal offense, and then coming out of it and just going on national TV again and talking about talking about the very reason why, I was charged and investigated for. But I really think it's important that we talk about it. We shine light on the truth, and we talk about facts of the matter, because at the end of the day, human rights defenders, we're not here to sit in our fancy offices and point fingers at the government to go like, hey, this is what you're not doing right. We want to work together. We're actually begging to work together. So let us work together hand in hand. Yeah.
Appreciate that, Heidi. Thank you so much for your time. Heidi Kwada from Refuge for the Refugees. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. Let's continue our look at why more than 500 refugees made a bitter escape from an Immigration Department detention centre in Sungai Bakat, Penang last week. Let's speak now to K. Sudhakaran Stanley. He is one of the co-founders of the LifeBridge Learning Centre, which is a school that provides free education to refugee children. Stanley, let's talk about what the breakout at the Sungai Bakat Immigration Depot signals to you. I'm wondering what you would like the public to understand about this incident that perhaps may be missing from the official narrative.
Thanks, Melissa and Sharad, for having me on the show once again. I think this is a very important issue that that we need to discuss. And I think even before we talk about the detention center, we must understand the reason that many of them are actually here today in Malaysia. Right now, as we are speaking, Melissa and Sharad, there are wars or there are conflicts happening in Myanmar, in different villages, in different cities. Villages are being burned. Artilleries are being fired. Airstrikes are being coming down. And there are women and children being killed, raped, and so on. As we are speaking, this is happening because this is an ongoing conflict that is still happening in Myanmar today at this point of time. So these people are humans are trying to run away from conflict, trying to save their lives and the cross border into Thailand, into Indonesia, and some of them end up in Malaysia as well. So they come here in hope of wanting to actually secure themselves and keep themselves safe. Now, in the very first instance, the arrest of these 500 over refugees in itself raises a lot of questions. I mean, why do we arrest people who are coming here in search of a refuge? You know, they're seeking for help and they need our help for protection and so on, but we arrest them. And what is more alarming is that we have learned from the various press reports and the statements that were released by ministers and the police that these refugees have been in detention for almost more than 2 years. And the most troubling part is that without access to UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Now, as a refugee, you know, or as a human, you have been in detention for almost 2 years in a detention center. You have no representation to legal means. You have no contact with the UN. You are basically like under ISA or an EO law. You know, you do not know when you're going to be released. You've been in for 2 years. You do not know what's your future going to be like, how many years more you're going to be in detention. And the conditions of prison, we all know it's a fact, you know, that the conditions in detention centers are horrible living conditions. I have been to these detention centers many years ago to provide medical aid services to migrant workers and refugees. I've seen how the detention centers are inside. And, you know, a lot of mental health issues that they go through having been there for 2 years and the conditions inside. And some of these issues might have forced them to actually run out from this detention centers. We do not know.
Right, right. So Stanley, in fact, the question probably best put to them, if they ever find a voice in the mainstream media, I mean, why they did exactly what they did, and despair is probably driving them. I want to ask you though, when you look at Malaysia's treatment of asylum seekers and refugees, people coming from conflict areas, how do we compare to our regional neighbors? I mean, the Rohingya problem is a very long one, long-standing one. We're talking decades. Yes. Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, all, including Bangladesh, are recipients of Rohingya refugees. Have we changed the way we treat them over the decades? Do we compare favorably or unfavorably to how our neighbors treat them?
I think to say that we are completely, you know, abusing or having ill treatment towards refugees would be a misstatement, because to some extent we have allowed refugees to be in our country. They have been working and they have been here for quite some time. But the fact is that there is no a proper legal surrounding to actually govern the way that we actually treat them. So this enables, for example, certain abuses to happen because they're not allowed to work. So when they're not allowed to work, then, you know, their wages and their protection from the Employment Act and so on does not apply to them. So sometimes they're not paid. We have handled cases before of refugees not being paid and so on. They have no access to education. That's the reason why we even started the school, and many other NGOs are giving them education as well in Malaysia. Healthcare services is something that they have to pay double or triple the prices if they go to a government hospital, and many other issues as well. So, you know, when we're talking about refugees in Malaysia, we're not only talking about the Rohingya refugees. I think there are around 180,000 registered refugees in Malaysia. This is UNHCR statistics. And out of these 180, there were 150 from Myanmar. And out of the 150,000, we're talking about 80% of these people from Myanmar are the Rohingya ethnics. And the different ethnics are from Chin and different villages in Myanmar and so on. So there is a large number also from different ethnics, and also a small number from Palestine, Syria, Afghanistan, and different conflicts.
Okay, so we seem to have this very, policy on refugees. It doesn't seem to make sense. And sometimes perhaps the language and the framing from immigration authorities has been quite xenophobic, anti-refugee. But how does anyone benefit from mass detentions of refugees?
Exactly. And why are we even detaining them? You know, these are resources that we have in our country. And that is why, you know, if you see, I have called for, actually many people, in fact, are calling for refugees to be allowed to work legally in the country. And we don't have to hire and go and sign an MOU with Bangladesh and, you know, and all this recruitment hassle, process hassle and so on. We already have ready manpower in this country. You know, so many of them are not allowed to work. Why not give them permits? Allow them to work. Okay, even if you do not want to ratify the 1951 Convention on Refugee Rights, due to many reasons, you know, they're afraid of opening up the floodgates and so on. But at least we can provide proper humanitarian reliefs to those that are already here.
Yeah, Stanley, I want to ask you this, though. You know, we seem to create a system in which people become vulnerable, or vulnerable people remain vulnerable. But vulnerability is perhaps something that can be used by certain groups. You know, somebody's vulnerability is an opportunity for exploitation. I mean, that's exactly, I think, at the core of this. We allow vulnerability to in some ways to allow exploitation. Would you agree?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, especially political parties, you know, when it suits them, you see, I think 1 year ago, I remember, you know, there were certain politicians that went on to stage and shouting Rohingya rights, and we're going to protect them, and, you know, we want them, and we give them proper rights and so on. And then this year we hear of them being in detention center for almost 2 years, and then, you know, they are running out and dying in accident and so on. So this is very sad because certain politicians in this country are actually making use of the situation to actually gain political mileage and so on. But in fact, when they are part of the government, they could actually make proper policies to actually address some of the issues that they are facing in this country. Okay. So that's very sad, you know.
Mm-hmm. Stanley, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for joining us on the show today. That was anti-corruption and human rights activist K. Sudhakaran and Stanley. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. Joining us now is Dr. Tharani Loganathan. She is a public health specialist and medical lecturer at the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine at University of Malaya. Dr. Tharani, we know your academic research is focused on migrant health in Malaysia, but I'm just wondering whether you can begin our conversation tonight by sharing how, you know, being detained at an immigration depot might impact the health of refugees and those detained. I mean, we're thinking about overcrowding situations as alleged by Suhakam and other rights groups, how that might have an impact in terms of the spread of disease and the like.
Hi, thanks for having me, Melissa. So immigration depots are notorious because they have this bad reputation of being crowded, okay? But also, that being said, immigration detention centers are highly restricted areas for security reasons. So not many people can go in. Of the non-governmental groups that go in, only Sohakam and ICRC allowed in. As ICRC, according to their policy, does not publish reports, but Suhakam publishes reports. So the conditions of the immigration detention centers have been described there and in other places. So the conditions are described as overcrowded, poorly ventilated, you know, having generally poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water and food, and also not having sufficient satisfactory healthcare. So this especially is not very good for infectious disease. It is at high risk for the spread of infectious disease.
Tarani, if I could ask you about, you know, our attitudes towards detentions and people inside it. There might be some Malaysians saying to themselves, well, it's fine, it's in a detention center, it's, you know, segregated from the larger population. What difference does it make to us? What would you say to them?
I would say a detention center or a prison is not in isolation from society. Okay, there's constant of movement of people in and out. People are getting detained. People go out for court visits, people go out to clinic visits. Then there's staff movement coming in and out. Their staff and family are all exposed as well. So they're not isolated from society. What affects people in detention also affects the general public. So we cannot say that we put them in an island and you know, that protects us. Things do not work that way, unfortunately. Yeah.
What we've also discovered is that there are about 1,500 children in these detention centres. I'm just wondering about the impact on their health, the physical health, their mental health of being kept in detention without any, you know, idea of when they are going to be let out, without any idea of perhaps being taken away from their parents. What do you think would be the impact to these children of this prolonged period of detention?
So, Melissa, you know, I mean, international guidelines and so on, they do not recommend detention of children. I mean, it's not in their best interest in any situation for children to be detained with or without their parents. Okay, it is profoundly impactful to the health of the child. Okay, so just like adults, detention would affect their physical and mental health. But children are growing and developing. So the detention of any length would affect their growth and development. So their psychosocial development, their mental, the emotional, the behavioral development, and so on. And it would affect their mental health a lot. So
But Tarani, can I ask you this?
Anxiety.
Yeah, if the authorities view this population of people as transient, they're here and they will leave at some point in time, do you think that lowers the incentive or disincentivizes authorities to care? Because this conversation about impact only matters if you think you're going to have a long-term relationship with these people. But if you think they don't, they will leave, then perhaps you don't care about the long-term impact.
Yeah, but Sharad, we should think about everyone as a human being and everyone having rights, and we have obligations to everybody on our soil. Okay. And that being said, I think today's topic is on refugees being detained, right, in immigration detention centers, and refugees basically have no place to go. Like, for instance, the Rohingya refugees, it is not safe for them to return home. There's nowhere else to go. And we can't say go back home. So, yes, there might be a process for them to be resettled and so on. But until that point, they are potentially having prolonged stay in Malaysia, unfortunately, but that is the reality. So we cannot get away from that and wish it away or try and put people in islands. I mean, it is the reality of the times. Yeah, we have a migration crisis. There is, there is ongoing genocide in Myanmar. So we will we will continuously have waves of migration. So it's just that we need to look forward to it and plan and have policies in place that are humane.
Dr. Thrani, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Appreciate your time. That was public health specialist Dr. Thrani Loganathan wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Bye. Signing up for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Thank you. Good night.